You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is Kevin Ryerson. Kevin Ryerson is best known for his prominence in helping Shirley MacLaine's spiritual search and for his role in her best-selling book and subsequent movie, Out on a Limb. An acclaimed author, expert intuitive, futurist, and trans-channel, Ryerson is a charismatic and energetic speaker. He has worked closely with Dr. Walter Semkew to study past lives. You can visit his website at kevinryerson.com. He is the featured presenter at the upcoming ARE Headquarters Conference, Soul Connections, Reincarnation, Past Lives, and Soul Groups Reunited in Virginia Beach from September 21st to the 23rd, 2012. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me here today.
Who is Kevin Ryerson?
Well, I always like to paraphrase the comedian Bill Cosby when he said, I started out as a child. And Kevin Ryerson was born and raised in a town in Ohio. And essentially, it was close to the famous Midway park there called Cedar Point. And I'd always had some interest in things like ESP, things to that effect. And the way I put it is that when other kids were playing with model airplanes, I was studying ESP, things like Zener cards, and as a hobby. But I emphasized that it was parapsychology I was studying because I was looking at it from sort of a science perspective. So when you ask who's Kevin Ryerson, I'm a guy from the Midwest who had a hobby or an interest in parapsychology that, with a high school education, I was someone who always had maybe one of several goals for myself. My original background was in graphic arts, so I think that kept some of my creative capacities open. And then I also had a strong interest in the field of parapsychology and felt that one day maybe I might enter the profession of psychology, maybe in something like a think tank. So I think like any kid, I had like career ambitions and so on and so forth, and they were fairly typical ambitions of someone growing up in the Midwest. But eventually, after about 10 years in with a professional background in graphic arts, I had an interest in the areas of parapsychology because also some of my own intuitive faculties had began to open up from those earlier studies. I had an early ability of working with seeing auras or working with psychometry just based on what were suggestions in books on parapsychology about development. But in actuality, it was when my father and I had moved to Phoenix, Arizona, that there was an Edgar Cayce study group there that I had joined because I had been studying Edgar Cayce as early as the sixth grade. Some of the early books by Edgar Cayce, such as Edgar Cayce on Dreams or Edgar Cayce on Atlantis, and all those things I just found fascinating. And so in joining the Edgar Cayce study group, it was for the purpose of becoming more involved in spiritual practices, like the prayer and meditation that was taught in the In Search of God group. And it was out of those series of meditations that more of my intuitive faculties began to develop. And in those study groups, gradually a channeling state began to develop from the course in meditation that was being taught there. And that is how I became involved with working with channeling today. So when you ask who's Kevin Ryerson, I think I'm like a lot of people who go to the ARE. I had an early interest in ESP, parapsychology, early interest in studying the Edgar Cayce material. And the interesting thing for myself is that Edgar Cayce actually began to develop some of his channeling abilities when he lived in Ohio with his photography practice. So I always thought of myself as a little bit not too different than Edgar Cayce, some fellow from the Midwest who had a strong interest in the field of parapsychology and eventually decided to pursue it as a career pursuit.
Could you tell us more about the nature of trance channeling?
Well, channeling itself it's a natural ability that everyone has. Everyone has an ability to enter into mild altered states of consciousness, either in the use of their intuition or in everyday phenomena like daydreaming. And as an example, in channeling, a person will enter into a mild altered state similar to daydreaming, where they will tap into not the rational, logical, critical faculties to figure something out. It is more that they will tap into a pre-existing set of insights that is what the psychologist Jung refers to as the collective unconscious. And everyone's had this experience in daydreaming where someone might be speaking with you and suddenly something in the conversation triggers an insight. And you go into the daydreaming state and the other person's continuing the conversation. You come back and you say, well, excuse me, I didn't mean to space out on you, but you said something that triggered a memory or triggered an insight, and it just came to me with such sudden clarity. And then the person who entered into the daydreaming state explains that in some detail to the person, and the conversation is advanced. Well, what trance channels have done is that they have taken these everyday, what I call intuitive or meditative reflexes, and then in turn, they have a development process where they train themselves to then use those abilities to go into these natural altered states and apply them to the benefit of either for themselves and for other people whom they serve. Edgar Cayce discovered his channeling abilities spontaneously when he went under hypnosis for an illness he was suffering and then could give a diagnosis of his own condition. My channeling states began in the Edgar Cayce study group when we were working with meditation in order to make contact with the collective unconscious or hopefully with the ambitions of maybe merging with what's called the higher self. And I had the good fortune when I was sitting there meditating one day that group members had the presence of mind to have a tape recorder when I went into a channeling state spontaneously. My sense was that I had just fallen asleep.
Wow.
And the personality by the name of John began to speak through in a voice that was I would say differed from my own, and essentially the people present presented him with a series of points of inquiry which he responded back to with a certain degree of intelligence. One of the people wanted, because they were familiar with the Edgar Cayce readings, asked about some healing they were in need of, and there were medical insights, not unlike what is called medical intuition, were communicated through. And when I came out of the meditation, everyone was a little surprised that it occurred, but because it was a study group focused on meditation, it wasn't completely without expectation. So I can only believe that perhaps my background in the creative field of graphic arts, combined with my early interest in the development of things like psychometry, and then the continuous sort of studies that a study group like the Edgar Cayce study group provided to meditate, all of those factors sort of combined to create my own entry into the phenomena of trance channeling. But to answer the question very specifically, it's just the setting aside of the logical, critical faculties to work with the more intuitive capacities, and it usually evolves out of practices or disciplines such as prayer and meditation.
it sounds like the work of Edgar Cayce had an influence on your intuitive development.
Oh, definitely. I honestly think that the study of the Cayce material provides probably the healthiest model a person can have towards their own practices of psychic development. In fact, it's been my experience that because I believe that anyone can be open to intuition, a great deal of what people take as descriptions about what intuition is or about what psychic phenomena is may shape some of what their early experiences of those episodes are. If a person comes in and if they have societal or religious descriptions and they begin to work with meditation, because meditation and working with altered states, the intention is to first create a sound and healthy link to a person's collective unconscious.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Kevin Ryerson.
Create a sound and healthy link to a person's collective unconscious and eventually what is called the higher dimensions of ourselves. There is going to be a period of time where either in the meditations or in the prayer and meditations or in the practice of altered states, that there will be where the person will examine removing from themselves perhaps anxieties, fears, or negative descriptions they have. This is fairly typical, for instance, say, in Buddhist practices, where in Buddhist practice they say, fear not your own fears, for they are the product of your own mind. And essentially, by looking at things like, say, the Edgar Cayce readings or other structured forms of meditation, such as practice, say, in some of the Zen practices, this gives a person healthy descriptions from both a spiritual, psychological, and what I refer to as a parapsychological perspective as to how these altered states of consciousness function for the well-being of the person. Rather than, in the bluntest of terms, they're bringing in superstitions surrounding what these natural altered states are all about. And again, I have found that the Edgar Cayce model of working with that to be one of the best descriptions that a person can have to study as sort of both their preliminaries and their practices, particularly if they want to develop any of their psychic abilities or their intuitive capacities.
Could you tell us about your work with Shirley MacLaine?
Yes. My work with Shirley was, I had been referred to Shirley by a mutual friend because Shirley had experienced a couple of trans channels before her work with me. But those channels, although in the channeling state, what was interesting, what was called the spirit guide that would speak through the channel, could speak in the English language. It was something of an archaic form of English, whereas the medium themselves were not particularly good at speaking English. So therefore, they were experiencing a form of what's called glossalia, in other words, a language they had not particularly mastered on the conscious level, but what could articulate in when an altered state of consciousness. So this mutual friend had referred me to Shirley as several things. One, someone who had some degree of expertise in the field, someone who actually was a practicing trans channel, that this was my actual area of expertise, it was my profession, and thirdly, I could sit down and be conversant with her on her own level, just in my own person, kind of like we're doing here, responding to a question such as you're putting to me. And the work with Shirley was extremely interesting. For almost 3, maybe 4 years, beginning around 1980, Shirley met with me on a fairly regular basis, and she was working with me as a consultant because she wanted to build her knowledge of what metaphysics was like. Shirley's a very disciplined person, and when she goes in for a part or a role, or she's learning new areas of dance, or if she, as an author and a social commentator, is exploring a subject material, she's very disciplined and explores it with the same discipline that she brings to like some of her performances. And in this case, she wanted to learn metaphysics for her own growth, and then eventually she wanted to learn it so that she could write about it as a social commentator and as an author, and above all else from an autobiographical perspective. So for almost four years, from 1980 to the publication of her book in 83 and 84, Out on a Whim, we worked on a several times monthly basis. And one of the things I had referred to her, of course, was the works of Edgar Cayce, which upon her review of those materials, that was like a huge leap for her, forward for her, because the Cayce materials are so comprehensive in their ability to communicate the fundamentals of metaphysics to people. Mm. So I would say that our work together was looking at the sociological benefits of working with altered states of consciousness, looking at what maybe some of the future potential was if society began to accept some of these deeper metaphysical principles. And then in her classic trilogy of books, which would be her first book, Out on a Limb, then her book, Dancing in the Light, then her book, All in the Playing, followed by other books which have become pretty much classics, in particular her book, The Camino, and two other books that she has published since The Camino, which was published in the year 2000. All of these are really just what she feels is her own honest journey that any person might take, not just her as a public figure, but that any person might take in their journey towards their answering that classic question, who am I, where am I going, and how do I get there? So you might say that my work was a little bit like Edgar Cayce in that, in helping Shirley answer that question, you know, about herself. And of course, those are the classic questions that are asked when anyone's exploring material, say from the Cayce material, or journeys into meditation, such as in Zen practices, or any spiritual practices that heighten one's relationship, shall we say, to the inner self and in outreach to how it is we may define the so-called higher power that we relate to as spirit and or God.
You you work with Dr. Walter Simkew. He was on the show a few weeks ago. Could you tell us? Oh, yeah. And he talked about you. Could you tell us from your viewpoint, explain to us the research and work you've done with him?
Certainly, yes. Did you enjoy your conversation with him?
Oh, yes. It was interesting.
Dr. Simkew's work is quite intriguing. I met Dr. Simkew about 10 years ago. He was referred to me, as many people are, through sort of like, you know, mutual associations. And as he explained it to me, his own journey in our work together was is that he had worked with a number of channels who were able to bring through insights about past lives. But he was a little surprised that when working with yours truly, that there was maybe a continuity or consistency in the ability to identify past lives that was, he set a fairly high standard for. It's what he referred to as the idea of using what are called forensic standards of evidence that you are used in a court of law in order to establish a person's personal identity. In other words, in the form of, say, things like medical forensics or birth certificates or graphology, that is the analysis of a person's handwriting, and also what are considered to be psychological and personality types that can be analyzed, say, from a person's diary or biography to establish firmly that this is who this person is in a court of law. And of course, these are the standards that are used by our society to establish identity in a court of law for, you know, legal purposes in the form of, like, you know, are you this person? in, who say, the inheritor in a will, et cetera, et cetera. So if these principles were enough to establish identity in a court of law, he felt that those same critical standards might be used to establish the identity of persons in past lives, particularly the use of medical forensics in the form of the measurement that is the most standard, in the form that bone structure does not necessarily alter on a person. A person may age, a person may put on weight or take off weight, as we all do over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is the bone structure remains consistent. So in my work with him, one of the things that he did is that he had done a number of cases where he felt that he had reached that standard of evidence just through his own medical background and his excellent qualifications as a scientific researcher. But he had a number of case histories that he refers to as cold cases that he simply was not able to correlate the person that it was living now with what he felt would meet the standards of a past life. Now, in this particular case, he was taking examples of public figures from, say, the 20th and in the 21st century, and then trying to correlate them with people who lived in what was called the portrait or the photographic era of the 20th, the 19th century, and even the 18th century. Plus, he had the insight of maybe concentrating and a key historical group of people who already had interrelationships. And in this case, he began to focus on the key figures in the American Revolution, whether that was George Washington, Jefferson, or John Adams. And with that, because their history, they left what was called a clear historical footprint. He had things like the diaries. He had like the forensic measurements that could be taken from the portraits. And all those things could be correlated with their potential candidates who he would feel were living historical personages today, because he could then correlate the biographies, correlate the historical patterns in their lives, and when they reached a critical point of evidence, he felt that he could then safely say that this was the reincarnation of that individual. Well, in his first case, one of his first cases with myself, he began working with what he considered to be a cold case of the public personality known as Ralph Nader. And here he felt that this was a person who, because he's such a clear-cut personality.
We'll be right back with more with Kevin Ryerson. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our conversation with Kevin Ryerson.
Of the public personality known as Ralph Nader. And here he felt that this was a person who, because he's such a clear-cut personality and is considered a revolutionary personality and has such a huge impact on politics, it was logical to perhaps make the hypothesis that he may have been amongst the founding principles. But search as he might 10 years ago, because this was before, shall we say, the internet was well-developed, he just simply couldn't find a correlation. So he decided to use this as a case history with myself in the channeling state. And when I went into the channeling state, he was able to make contact with another state of consciousness who is referred to as a spirit guide by the name of Entendre. People who are familiar with the work with Shirley MacLaine might be more familiar with the name Tom McPherson, who worked with Shirley. But Entendre appeared to be the intelligence to work mostly with reincarnation, possibly because, as described as an Egyptian priest, his culture was already familiar with the concept of reincarnation. But in the case of the Ralph Nader case, essentially two factors occurred. Entendre gave a clear description as to the name, the place that the past incarnation of Ralph Nader held within what was called the Continental Congress. he gave further descriptions as to what his occupation was and the place he held in history. Plus, he made the prediction that the features of Ralph Nader, of a surviving portrait, would and could be found, would bear a striking resemblance to what he called the clear, well-sharp, angular features of Ralph Nader as he lives today. Well, Walter essentially began to look into the case. It took him a while. He came back, double-checked with Spirit, and they encouraged him, said, yes, you know, there's a portrait exist. And eventually, Walter, in doing his research, under almost metaphysical circumstances, finally came across the portrait of that had been described, as well as the name of the individual. And the bottom line was that he felt that the biography matched, because the person who Ralph Nader was a member of the Continental Congress. He was the person who was responsible for designing some of the key symbols that have gone into the Great Seal of America and of the United States, and as well as he was almost sort of like a consumer activist in that he would negotiate on the benefit between Native Americans and settle land disputes with the Native Americans, often in favor of the Native Americans. So both the portrait feature and the corollaries as to the biography, the manner of speech that was preserved in some of the diaries, all these things reached that critical forensic point of evidence that was critical to the scientific standards that Dr. Simkiw was standing. So Dr. Simkiw felt that he had a new resource in channeling and being able to find what he called forensic or documentable past lives in his work with me. So in a way, I worked with Dr. Simkiw, much as I'd worked with Shirley MacLaine, initially as a consultant, and then we formed a friendship over the years. And he and I have been, we've co-founded a group that's called ICES, which essentially continues the work and the correlation of now some over 1,000 case histories of reincarnation that we feel reach this critical level of scientific evidence of past lives.
ICES, what's the website for that?
Oh, boy. You know, it used to be easy to rattle off because it was simply johnadams.net, but I apologize at the moment because the immediacy of it doesn't come to mind. But it's if a person puts in Walter Simkiw, S-E-M-K-I-W, along, say, with my name, Kevin Ryerson, it should pull up the website fairly immediately. Or they can go to my website, which is kevinryerson.com, and then we feature a link to Dr. Simkiw's website at ICES. But essentially, it's it would be ICES, .org. But I apologize. This doesn't immediately come to mind.
Oh, that's fine. Now, you've mentioned your website. What else can people find on your website?
Okay. Well, they can find any number of things. Of course, there's our contact information. But also, what we try to do is to make the website something of a resource for people. The Edgar Cayce Foundation is mentioned. There's some literature that we suggest for people. In particular, there's a book called The Roots of Consciousness by Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove, who's probably the nation's leading parapsychologist. In fact, he has a PhD in parapsychology from Berkeley. And he was the one who set the standard for all future PhD programs, specifically in the field of parapsychology. Also, there are a number of channelings there that I have given that are designed to help people have an easy access to ways in which they might develop their own intuition. There's a principle that's called the eight human needs, and it's the idea that there are key psychic states that we have that are very similar to either what are referred to as the fundamental human needs, as referred to by Abraham Maslow, as a psychologist, said, we have deep psychic needs that are as real and tangible as, say, something as vitamin C. If vitamin C is present in the system, you have health. If vitamin C is removed from the system, you have illness. Restore the vitamin C, and the person returns to health. And in the area of what he referred to as psychic needs, he referred to people had psychic needs in the form, first, obviously, say, like, you know, food, fire, shelter. But also then, once the survival needs are met, we start getting into things that we have a need of beauty in our lives. We have a need of relationships with people in our lives, a sense of justice, a sense of security. And that these psychic needs are just as tangible as any other. Well, the eight psychic needs that I list, that I refer to as the eight primary human needs, are things like right mind, which is the clarity that a person may have as their needs are being met. Also, right understanding, which is the right to life without fear. Right labor, which, much like in Buddhism, it means that there is a life purpose we have that we can put into action in our lives. It can be social service, it can be occupation, it can be career. But it's really something that we have an aptitude for and that we can explore. And when we align with that right labor, we begin to shift from what we consider to be karma to what is called our dharma, meaning the purpose of the service that we are here for. The others, just quickly, are things like right diet, which is our right to life and health and well-being. Of course, Casey is famous, you know, for the dietary models that were healing for people. And the general suggestion is that the more we move towards vegetarianism, the more we work with both an ethical diet and total well-being, after which there's right fellowship. People who we associate with, who were psychically compatible, or members of what's called our soul group, right prayer, right meditation, right prayer being the time that we essentially communicate with our inner self, and right meditation being the time that we spend listening, you know, to the divine spark that's within each and every one of us, or to the collective unconscious, or to the higher power. Right expression is in there, in that it's how we articulate or express ourselves to the world out of the growing sense of our spirituality or our nature. And then finally, again, we return to what's called right mind, which is the clarity a person has as they're meeting each one of these psychic needs. So those are resources that are at the website to help people along their spiritual journey. And of course, again, there are references to major resources like ARE study groups, things to this effect.
And that's at kevinryerson.com.
Yes.
All right. Well, you'll be speaking at the upcoming ARE conference, Soul Connections, Reincarnation, Past Lives, and Soul Groups Reunited in Virginia Beach from September 21st to the 23rd. What will attendees experience there?
Oh, you know, that will be, I think that'll be extremely interesting for people. One, there will be a number of speakers present who are what Dr. Sim Q refers to as independently verified cases. These will be speakers such as Jeff Keane.
We'll be right back with more with Kevin Ryerson on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Kevin Ryerson.
These will be speakers such as Jeff Keane, who had a past life recall of his being involved in the Civil War. He remembered a conflict on a battlefield. Under medical examination, he appeared to bear types of a birthmark that were in the wound pattern that were suffered during the Civil War. And the examination of those of those birthmarks in the wound pattern actually settled forensically once and for all what had happened in a series of wounds that the historical person was that they had received on the battlefield. And later, the discovery of a diary where the historical persons themselves had described what had occurred was able to confirm the medical diagnosis that was made based on the birthmarks. Dr. Sinque himself will be speaking about the work that he is currently doing on past lives and soul groups and documentation, some of which was his work with yours truly. But he's expanding the work to also include examining other databases of reincarnation, such as that of Ian Stevenson. And he is broadening the study to include the metaphysical implications of reincarnation. His goal is that he feels it is that if reincarnation can move beyond, say, just a matter of belief and become a matter of knowledge in the form of scientific knowledge, that this can be a powerful moderator on people's thinking, that if they know with a high degree of certainty that they themselves might be another person from another time, another culture, another race, another person whom they were once in opposition to, that this can be a powerful force in contributing to human behavior that leads to a more peaceful culture. I myself will be speaking to the people who gather there about my own work with Dr. Sinque, reincarnation, my development as a channel. I'll probably be including some of the information about how people can develop their own capacity for tapping into their own past lives. And then working with Dr. Sinque, I will be giving a demonstration of trans-channeling, such as Dr. Sinque has worked with, as well as was experienced by Shirley MacLaine. Two other folks, I think they'll be interesting. They're what are called the Bakker Boys. The Bakker Boys are two brothers who have been identified from a series of past life channelings that Dr. Sinque had worked with yours truly, as a reincarnation of Laurel and Hardy. And it's a fascinating case history because, unknown to either myself or Dr. Sinque, it turned out the Bakker Boys were one of the most extensive collectors of Laurel and Hardy memorabilia, and they have grown up to become professional comedians, and they're quite good. So they'll be appearing also, describing their case histories, along with a couple of other contributors who would be describing their past lives and how other people might be able to benefit from tapping into their past life.
We're about out of time. Do you have any final thoughts before we go?
If I was to try and encourage people to, to look to the future on things, one, I always try to leave people with a positive message. And I would point out that one of the things that Casey was famous for instance, but put very clearly so it benefited people, was a famous Earth changes prophecies or predictions. And they were never intended to necessarily frighten people into, certain social patterns or behavior. Edgar Casey was the first person to really alert people to the idea that changes that they bring in their lifestyle bring immediate benefits to their community and their broader social order and even the world. He pointed out that in Atlantis, certain behavior led to the sinking of Atlantis.
Well, thank you for all this information, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Well, great. Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
And now it's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose. To find out more, go to KimmyRose.com. That's KimmyRose.com. Well, hello.
Hello.
And what's today's thought for the day?
Today's thought for the day is reading 1603:1. In the manner, the way ye attend, ye treat or ye hold, in thy mental self, thy brother's position, or thy neighbor's or thy friend's as thy own, That is the manner, the concept ye hold of the Creator.
Hmm.
I'm going to listen to you because I know that I just feel like I would love to ask you to just give that, like feel that and explain that to people because you do this well. You do.
I know that in the New Testament it talks about, or Jesus said that how can you love God if you don't love your brother? And I think that can be, some people might think they should go off perhaps on top of a mountain by themselves and commune with God. But the fact is you can't ignore those around you. In fact, you have to love them. And that's one way of getting closer to God. That's an important way.
I think that's so important. And when you to talk about that community, churches, you know, people think that it's just about sitting and, you know, listening and following, you know, whatever is told to them when really it's about sharing. It's about true. It's about community. I see true democracy is the space that we all share and listen to one another. The, you know, and we, to me, it's this reading too. It's in the mental self and looking at your brother and understanding and then also sharing what you feel. If you don't choose to really be open to understand another person, how can you really, really understand that, you know, yourself? Because we are all manifested through and made and through our Creator. So how could you really do that? You can't.
Well, thank you for doing the thought for the day today.
Art, thank you so, so much.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Kevin Ryerson for talking to us. Remember, he'll be at the ARE Headquarters Conference, Soul Connections, Reincarnation, Past Lives, and Soul Groups Reunited, from September 21st to the 23rd. Thanks also to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce.